the firm or the institution comes first. The investment providers are usually second. The advisor themselves providing the advice are typically third. And then maybe the actual investor is fourth or even fifth after the fact. So certainly not in the best interest in serving the individual investor in the way that it's presented. We've never seen a market that is as artificially inflated as we have today.
What if you could reclaim hours of free time each week, create legacy building wealth, and devote more energy to your passion projects without giving up on your career as a life-saving MD? Dr. Vikram Raya is a functional cardiologist, high-performance coach, and real estate expert, is here to give you the tools, strategies, and solutions you need to transform your life, unlock your limitless potential, and achieve greatness, all while freeing up your precious time. Welcome to Limitless MD. Let's dive in.
All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Limitless MD. I'm your host, Vikram Ryan. Today, man, I have a really special guest. He is a person who not only crushed in Wall Street, then he decided to walk away. So we're going to hear about his very interesting story. His name is Dana Cornell. He's the founder of Cornell Capital, and he is a man who's contrarian. He wants to help you cut taxes up to six figures even, and he wants to show you double-digit growth, but do it in a safe way, which is unheard of. So Dana, welcome to the show. Can't wait to dig into everything you got to share with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. I was looking forward to this one. It's going to be fun.
All right, my friend. Let's get into something controversial. Most people live at the whims of the market, whims of their retirement accounts, the whims of the tariffs or, you know, immigration policies. You've helped your clients really steer clear of all that and just navigate and be successful in every market cycle. Talk to me about that. Talk to me about the mindset that you sort of infuse into you and your clients.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure we'll get into my story, but you know, the short answer of that is traditional wealth management is built for the institution, not the individual by any means.
And so what do you mean by that?
That means that business model is built on confusion and complexity, and they're master marketers to teach people that things have to be done a certain way. And hopefully you don't ask a lot of questions, and we're taught internally, you know, we talk for hours on internally the misdirection that we're literally taught to lead with clients. So one of my favorite things is to pull the curtain back on what really happens behind the scenes, where the investor benefits, but quite honestly, more times than not, where they don't. So what I mean by that is, you know, if you look at who profits in that relationship, right, because it needs to be a value exchange, the firm or the institution comes first. The investment providers are usually second. The advisor themselves providing the advice are typically third. And then maybe the actual investor is fourth or even fifth after the fact. So certainly not in the best interest in serving the individual investor in the way that it's presented.
So help me understand, you know, your background, your origin, and sort of the moment where you're like, hey, what's going on here?
Yeah. So I'll try and give it to you quick. There's a few inflection points that kind of frame in my whole view of this and some things that really changed my path of wealth management. So I grew up in Western New York. My dad's still an excavation contractor. My mom was a kindergarten teacher. We didn't come from money. So the fastest way, and I had enrolled in law school and had this in a finance degree. So I figured I'm footing the bill. Finance is cheaper. We'll go this route first. Start knocking on doors to meet people. I have to build a network some way. It's the fastest way I could think to do it. So I'm out knocking on doors. It just so happened to be a unique time in the markets. It was the end of 07 into 2008. So I'm a new young guy, spiky hair out of college, big baggy suit. I had long johns on under my suit in Western New York walking around. But I'll never forget those days because where I don't have a book of business, I'm trying to build a business. I'm talking to these people who have had their advisor for 10, 20, 30 years, followed the traditional model, and it's mid-2008 and their advisor won't pick up the phone because the real answer is they have nothing more to say to them. They have no idea what's going on. I find that out later. Right? But these people's lives are devastated. And I'll never forget that interaction. So that sent me down a different path to start questioning, how can this model that's so great and promoted and everybody follows the same path create this type of chaos when it doesn't work, right? So how can you reverse engineer that? And how do you mitigate that risk? So that led me down a path of alternative investments. That led me down a path.
I'll pause you there.
Yeah.
For the audience out there, what is alternative investments?
Yeah, great question. So when I say alternative investments, it is direct ownership in private real estate deals, very similar to what you guys do. Private equity, so taking ownership in small business, that's different shapes and sizes. Private debt, so you become the bank essentially for a private project or private business, something like that. And then there's venture capital, which is more your growth component, right? Maybe like companies that are prior to them going public, we can have shares and get access to that prior to that. Some early stage companies that are on the up and coming. So you take a small piece of your money.
So venture capital, we have startups and you can throw in the pre-IPO access all
yeah.
there. And mm-hmm. it's a little bit more speculative, but a lot of growth potential there.
Correct.
Then you got private credit and private debt. Is that the same thing or is that a little bit different?
It's the same thing.
Okay. Private debt. Then you got private real estate and then you got private equity.
That's so right.
It's really some of the most lucrative investments on the planet, not been given to the traditional or the average investor.
Huh. Correct. Exactly. Now, the key to that is, and you make a good point, right? So I had that at Morgan Stanley that allowed me to be different or look different, but they quickly realize that hierarchy of who benefits first. There's three or four layers of fees. If you even get access and qualify as a client, you're getting such a watered down product. You really can't benefit, right? At least not to the extent that you should. So
over our conversations over the last, couple of months, I remember you were telling me you were managing about $1.4 billion of clients' funds.
Yeah.
And when you heard that you're not allowed to share this with most of them or a lot of the people, it really rubbed you the wrong way. Tell me why.
Yeah. So to give context for everybody listening to that story, so knocking on doors, fast forward, that grew. I was managing, depending on the day and the market fluctuation, it was around 1.4, a little more, somewhere in there. Forbes rankings, 40 under 40, best in state, all those things, which is so funny in itself because they never asked me how any of my clients did. It was how much money do you manage and what fee do you charge on those assets? But it gave me credibility in the industry. The tipping point was really, there's a division of my prior firm that is the advanced planning department. So working with clients, typically on liquidity events, but it's 50 million liquid net worth and above.
Wow.
And as soon as you have to test into that as the top 1% of financial planners in the firm, but you entered that boardroom and the advice and the access that I was not allowed to talk about or give my current clients, that's what they led with. So we talk a lot about tax planning first, right? If I can keep a dollar in your pocket instead of overpaying the IRS, that's a win for the investor, right? We have to minimize outflows. That's what they lead with in that room. So topic one is tax planning. Prior to that, I said, if we're talking about tax planning, you can't say a word about it. This is the firm directing me. You have to tell them, hey, you made a lot of money. That's the problem. Paying tax is a good problem to have. Makes me cringe to even say it out loud today because it's so far from the truth. So now, what I learned in those rooms, because that level of client can afford and gets access to a different level of advisor and different access to opportunities, that's just the truth of the situation. Now we cut our clients' tax bills, regardless of the income source or type, by typically 40 to 50% or more year over year. You have a liquidity event, we're avoiding all the tax on that sale.
So Dana, I'm a plastic surgeon, for example. I make $750,000 a year, all W-2.
Yep.
I own my medical office and I have a surgical center. That's about it. Walk me through what are the pitfalls of what they've been doing and maybe give an example of similar type of clients that you walked to a different destination of where they should be.
Yeah, for sure. Worked with a lot of people that fit that profile at my prior firm, right? And prior to that, I'd make sure they had their basic deductions done. Maybe they did some type of tax strategy, but the answer you got a lot of times, it's W-2 income. If you're a business owner, we could do more, but you're kind of locked in where you're at.
Right.
That's not true at all. The reality is if you understand the tax code, even that $750,000 income, you should be able to cut that net tax liability by about half year over year.
What are the biggest strategies for that person, you think?
There's multiple, from solar credits to investing in movies to give you direct credits to W-2 to active trading strategies. There's probably a list of 6 to 8 go-to core strategies specifically that work for W-2 that would directly apply, none of which are IRS red flag. Nothing that we do is out of bounds, unethical.
They go from having a $300,000 tax bill to maybe $100,000.
Put $150,000 back in your pocket.
Wow. Right. And so even if whatever the investment strategy that they're using to get the tax benefits doesn't necessarily pan out fully,
exactly,
it doesn't matter in a way, because exactly, you just saved $150,000 of taxes.
So we talk a lot about, and look, doctors, entrepreneurs, business owners, right? Your focus is your craft, right? That's your baby. Whether it's your practice as a doctor, your business as a business owner, usually their family finances maybe don't get ignored, but they just don't have the time and energy to dive in as deeply as they could. So that's why when I walked away from the billion for Morgan Stanley, and I literally just had enough. I was fed up with the discrepancy in advice and just not feeling like I was doing the best for my clients, right? And I had two little kids show up that are looking at me in the eyes, and I want them to know dad does a good job for people. The firm literally asked me if I needed mental health counseling because it's lucrative, you know, but it was the right thing to do. And I would never change it, because now I can show people like that there's such a different way to build wealth. You just need access to the information and the strategies. And it's the same thing on the investment side. If you can get access to it.
Yeah, let's talk about the investment side. Now with Cornell Capital, you know, you have this vehicle where you're providing access to things that before you needed $50 million of, you know, liquidity or net worth to get. And now people with, you know, means, but not necessarily that level, mm-hmm, are able to get similar type of asset investment choices. Talking about some of that.
Yeah. So, you know, at prior firm, you had to be extremely high net worth to even get a look at a direct deal, right? I can do that now, and I can provide the proper due diligence, because the biggest thing in a private investment is the risk, right? It's very, they're private investments. It's not like a publicly traded stock where you can pull up the stock report. So you have to have the knowledge and the skill set and the team of people to be able to dissect that deal and make sure the risk is appropriate, it's a viable opportunity, and then where does it fit in context to your overall individual financial plan, right? That's where a lot of people, if they even get access, they go wrong, because they don't know how to vet the deal and they don't know how to quantify where it fits into their potential situation. So that's what we provide. We have a team of 12 that does due diligence on any deal that you see from us. But from my, as far as access, from my 23 years in institutional wealth management and my ability to raise capital, I get these institutional level opportunities that are then afforded to my clients at Cornell Capital as a result.
And you can also get better economics because of the check size that you're able to bring. So now they're getting a deal that they perhaps can't get anywhere else.
So you might not even get a look at it. And if you did, you're not going to get the same economics. You're not going to get the same deal typically than you would going through us, nor the oversight of a team of literally 12 people doing due diligence.
And it's not just you're just pushing, you know, like investment products. You're also on the investment, on the management side, where you're like evaluating them holistically.
Correct.
Like, hey, you're here. Here's your income. Here's your financial goals. Here's your retirement goals. Here's your insurance. Here's your taxes. And here's your investments so far. We think pairing these investments, we think reducing your taxes here. We think, so it's really more active, holistic wealth management, wealth creation, almost like a mini family office, if you will, for these individuals.
Exactly what it is, right? It's just the rewiring the strategy and the structure oftentimes, because to be very clear, we're a financial planning firm first. I have access to these things. You're seeing things that I'm putting my own money in and we're doing due diligence on. But I've also structured this firm so if you love your CPA and they're doing a good job, we coordinate with them. If you love your investment advisor and they can execute the strategy we develop for you, great. That is, I'm agnostic to where you do business or who you do it with.
So let me take a pivot here and ask you another question.
Yeah.
We're in the time of recording this, summer of 2025. Talk to me about the economy. Talk to me about rates. Talk to me about are we expecting a recession? Are we expecting the next boom cycle? AI, you know, tariffs. Like, give me your juicy thoughts on this.
So, man, this could be, again, another 2-hour podcast. I'll try and summarize some high level thoughts that I think. So as it relates to traditional investing, right? So when I say that, I mean publicly traded stocks and bonds, the S&P 500, the world that most people at least have some exposure to. We've never seen a market that is as artificially inflated as we have today. Across the board, people are expecting some type of pullback. Honestly, probably not in the short term. And who knows, right? Everybody's crystal ball is as cloudy as the next one. But I will say it's interesting when every major investment firm lines up their forward-looking projections, right? That the S&P 500, after inflation, is projected to essentially earn nothing the next 10 years. And that goes in these trends of 10 to 20 year super cycles that historically have always happened in markets. So if that's likely the case, which just historically we're due for that, where markets are priced, we're due for that, right? So it might not even be a dramatic 2008 drop, could be, but it might just be a sideways slow burn for 10 years, which is almost more painful.
Yeah. Right?
So if you don't have an opportunity to take that type of risk and fluctuation out of the game, and then at the same time from growth, latch on to these mega trends that are changing. I mean, AI, but how do you play AI, right? Cryptocurrency, how do you efficiently do that by minimize your risk? Right? These are things that are changing the world, but there's inherent risks in those as well, right? And if you bet wrong on those, your experience is vastly different. So having access to the right opportunities is key. Having the right oversight of where to go in those markets is key. But it's as doom and gloom as the S&P 500 may sound, potentially, if those scenarios play out, there's just as much potential on the upside if you know where to put money in and how to navigate markets, right? But if you're kind of blinders on, this is how we've done it for 30 years, this is what my parents did type of thing, those are the people that are probably gonna get burned a little bit.
So my thoughts, Dana, are like, it's time to seek alpha, right? Where is alpha? And it doesn't have to be in the same place that you found it the last 10 years. It's also, it's a global economy, right? And there are multiple asset classes. We've talked about the alternatives, like private credit / we've talked about, you know, even like North American sports teams is an asset class that you can invest in. Private real estate, you know, even life insurance like policies are cool. And there's all sorts of cool things, private equity. And then you have different countries. So like if US starts to slow down, there's other countries that are on the rise. So pay them in various ways, whether ETFs or even, you know, other means of investing in that country. So it's more about where is opportunity versus is there an opportunity? I think that's the emphasis that what I'm hearing from you, Dana. And so sounds like having someone in your corner who has the experience, the breadth, the team, the due diligence needed will allow people to navigate these next 5 to 10 years.
Strategy and direction are going to be the most important. Execution, you just need access, right? We can give you access. You may already have access to those things, but if you don't have the right roadmap and the right guidance, it's going to be two very different sides of the coin as far as your experience. Even to your point, real estate markets. Real estate as an asset class has issues still, but there's also so many gems. If you're working with the right operator like you guys and position the right way to take advantage of that, well, that's such a unique opportunity, but you have to be able to sift through that to find those unicorns like what you guys are doing right now and seeing the advantages amongst all of the chaos in that particular space. So,
yeah. You know, I was talking to someone of the top brokers in Atlanta. He's like, yeah, a year and a half from now, people are going to kick themselves saying, oh, I wish I bought everything that I laid my hands on because, quote unquote, this is the bottom and he believes in real estate. And so I was like, interesting, right? Like, if you've been through a couple of market cycles, you have the wisdom to know, and it's hard earned wisdom, obviously, but that's what you want right now, and whatever the asset class, and you know, cryptos are all the craze, but people remember the pain of crypto, and that pain will come again, but people don't realize
that's it,
timing, and all of that. So, the general public is by the time they act, it's already too late
for sure.
So. Let me ask you a question. There are a lot of millionaires listening to the show today. Give me the top 5 mistakes millionaires make.
Top 5 mistakes? That's a great question. One is not taking control of their own finances.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, you need to run your family finances like a business, right? The days of I pay an investment advisor to watch my money, therefore I have to be protected, are long gone. So if you're in that traditional relationship or that environment, I would strongly encourage you to take a deeper look at that. And we do that by helping people just literally establish your baseline. Like, percentages are so misleading. Let's see how you've actually done in performance. And then what are you paying for that? Is there value there? Right? I get it all the time. Well, I've played golf with my investment. I used to be that guy, right? I played golf with my investment advisor every Thursday for the last 15 years. He's a great guy. Well, that doesn't mean he's doing well for you in your portfolio. You know, they accept the fact that most CPAs don't necessarily give strategic, proactive tax advice.
Yeah,
is another serious key.
Yeah, it seems like CPAs are more about compliance versus
100%
versus trying to legally reduce your tax burden.
There's a very clear difference between a CPA who is a tax preparation, which is 100% compliance. That is in their mind. That's their mission. That's not all of them, but that's the majority. And a tax strategist is someone who's dissecting the tax code to see how can you use it to your benefit. 99% of the tax code is developed for write-offs, right? CPA typically will say, do less because that's less of a potential issue on your return. Well, we don't do anything that you know, is out of bounds or anything like that. It doesn't mean all tax strategy is. It's just you need to know how to interpret the code.
Okay, so one, take back control. Two is realize that if you don't have the right tax person in place, you're leaving a lot of money on the table.
Yeah, just do a full analysis. See what you're actually leaving on the table, you know? Yeah, and you know, just the point that actually I saw this the other day and it hit home. So you work 13 years of your working career just to pay taxes. Most people would probably like to cut that down a little bit. The third, you know, the reason I coined and trademarked the reverse financial plan is everybody used to ask me, what's my number? How much money do I need to save to then eventually pull one income stream so I can finally buy my time back, is really what you're saying, right? So the theory of the reverse financial plan is, and this is what we started doing with our clients, why wouldn't I buy pieces of your time back now with passive income? So it's not what's the mountain of money you need. It's what opportunities produce consistent, predictable, diversified income streams, and how much of that can we get strategically to maximize your liquid net worth to buy your time back, or at least make work optional, right? If you have options, your game changes.
Yeah. Work optional is essentially the beginnings of freedom.
That's it. That's it, right? That's the name of the game. Everybody does it, but you do it in a way where, you know, save, hope 2008 doesn't come and finally somehow pull an income stream. You know, the fourth would probably be lack of coordination of their overall advisory team, right? So if you can buy into the thesis of you should run your family finances like a business, you wouldn't have a business that your managers didn't speak to each other, right? Makes no sense. So we run typically, depending on the needs of the client, but quarterly or semi-annual, what we call board of advisor meetings, which quite simply just means instead of you having to speak the language for your attorney, to your CPA, to your investment advisor, and whoever else is in your world, we put everybody on one Zoom and we quarterback that meeting. So everybody's in tune with the financial plan. Everybody's on the same page with the strategic initiative for this family and this client. Everybody hears the same thing. So there's no discrepancies. Everybody knows their mission and what they need to do for that quarter, right? And the efficiencies that come out of that are night and day. Right. And then I think the fifth is really just financial education as a whole. You know, nobody's coming to save you. Can't tell you how many people say, oh, I just put my statements away. I don't want to look at it. You know, that's the worst thing you can possibly do. So 1 through 4 helps you not do that, but you have to take some control here. Yeah. and lean into financial education and get someone who's non-biased to give you at least an opinion of what's going on.
And Dana, that's one of our missions here at Limitless, is really to help physicians take back control.
Yeah.
Autonomy, you know. They need to understand their finances. They need to have financial literacy. They need to become proactive investors and really, you know, create those multiple streams of income.
100%.
And yep. And then be tax efficient while they're doing that, so they can have that next level life. And it's lifestyle design. You're doing this for a lifestyle. So might as well, like you said, reverse engineer what that lifestyle looks like. How much do you need? And then we start chipping away at it versus waiting for that big payday like you suggested. Yeah.
Exactly. Yep.
That's awesome.
Same page, man. Same page.
That's awesome. Who are your heroes?
You know, from a business standpoint, it's hard not to love Uncle Warren and Charlie Munger, especially their dynamic of those two. I love the titans of the past who forged their own path and went against the grain, because I truly feel we are disrupting traditional wealth management and the thought process and what we've been trained to think. Even I'm saying that for me as a former advisor that drank that Kool-Aid. So it's a general statement, but anybody, same thing you guys are doing, right? I mean, we walk the same path. You left the traditional model and look at what you're doing now and look at the people you're leading, listening to this podcast. That's the people I admire. That's the people that we're here to help. And that's why I did the same thing and walked away, and jury's still out if I need the mental health counseling they offered, but it's working out so far.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Where do you see Cornell Capital in 10 years?
Yeah. You know, the response, to be honest, when I did this, I have two little kids at home. So it started as somewhat of a lifestyle business for myself too, but I'm driven by contribution, and the results that we're getting people is just, it's hard to ignore, you know? So it's very fulfilling for me. So I think in 10 years, Cornell Capital is probably a pretty well-known name in the industry of wealth management. And we've done our job to disrupt and put a lot of families on a different path to really, truly have generational wealth. And if we can do that, I'll be pretty happy.
That's awesome, man. What's on your nightstand right now in terms of books?
Yeah, three kids books that I read last night. Actually, I'm reading right now a Scaling Up book.
Bern Harnish, that one?
No, that's a good one. Allison Maslin,
okay,
who's a great business coach and a friend, wrote that. So we're getting through that one now, but it's pretty interesting.
You're a damn successful guy. I mean, you've done a lot in a short amount of time. What do you think are some of the inflection points? Have you ever had a coach, a mentor? What allowed you to get to where you are right here?
Yeah.
Like, is it always mindset? And is it religion? Yeah. Is it faith? Talk to me about that.
That's a great question, man. We talk about this with my clients too, right? So we have a process that takes you through six M's of how you need to progress through to embrace what we do. The first one is mindset. I've been probably like you, Tony Robbins fan since I was young. Coaches, I've always overinvested in coaching, consulting, anything that can get my mind to stretch and think differently. And on top of that, challenge maybe the status quo of just because it's done a certain way, is that the best way to do it? I think that would credit to a lot of my success. But I still do all those things today. I've got two coaches and masterminds, and you know, I'm the first guy to jump in to learn something new. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was curious, what are the rest of them?
So it goes through mindset, and then we map out where you're at. Then we do the moves you need to kind of accomplish to get it done. And then we match it up to the strategies that have to fit. And then it's monitor and move on from there. So we take you through that process.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, it works pretty well. It's pretty efficient. And the biggest thing is the mindset, right? It's usually a misalignment of what we've been taught. Myself as an advisor first, and then giving that to clients as well.
What's your top three tips to the listeners on when they get punched in the face, when there's a lot of adversity, when things are about to fail? What are some strategies to overcome?
Yeah. Well, I can say from an investment standpoint, just in my experience, time solves most chaos in any investment situation, whether it's a real estate deal going longer right now or markets that are declining. So it's patience in time of turmoil.
I want to pause that because that was so good. Time solves most problems. It sounds like financial problems, at least, even.
Yeah.
Patience in the time of turmoil.
Yeah.
I think Warren Buffett had something to where it's like, you know, in any market correction, you know, the impatient people transfer wealth to the patient people or something like that. Something along those lines.
That's it. Yeah. I mean, it's very true. Yeah. You know, I think if you combine that with educating yourself enough, like you say, like we very well could be at the bottom of the real estate market. The general consensus or people are still scared to death of it, but that's the opportunity. You know, the guys that came in my office mid to end of 2008 and put money in stocks that were all time lows because they saw an opportunity benefited, you know, tenfold, right? The people that invest in real estate now with the right operators and understand the right deals will benefit the same, right?
I think I remember a story where it was Sir John Templeton, who I think it was after maybe World War II, maybe.
And yeah.
He was like, oh, he was borrowing money to put money in the market.
Yeah.
People were like, are you crazy?
Yeah. Bought everything under a dollar or something. It's crazy. Yeah. Yeah. But being able to have the fortitude to go on offense when most are getting ready to play defense.
Yeah. You know, I really believe
those two switches.
I think everyone has to be at least a 30 to 35% contrarian. And I wanted to ask you one more thing. You know, people say wealth is a mindset and poverty is a mindset. What do you think about that?
I think it's true. I think it's hard to change that mindset unless you're exposed to a certain level, right? Like I can tell you my own experience. Like I managed wealth for a living. I managed $1.4 billion for people. And until I stepped into another level of 50 million and up, what I thought I knew, I had no idea, right? And then you go to $1 billion families and up, that's a next level too. So yeah, I think it's a mindset, but I think there's levels to it. And until you have access or you're exposed to it, it's hard to, you can will yourself to think a certain way, right? But you have to have some proximity to that.
Yeah.
To make it.
Wealth is a mindset, but also proximity is power. So you need both.
That's it.
I like
that. Yeah, exactly.
All right, my friend. Well, how can people get into your universe and ecosystem?
Yeah. Thanks, man. So I think we're putting in the show notes. Like I want to always add value. So if you're willing to hang in here and listen to us bat it back and forth today, there's a link at just cornellcapitalholdings.com/free. There's a bunch of free tax resources, just some interesting stuff you can download there. In the show notes, we'll have a link to set up a meeting with the team. And, you know, the one thing I would probably say is if anything was interesting, we do the financial audit, which is really independent third party look, very cost efficient. If I can't give you six figures in value back in 90 days, doesn't cost you anything.
Yeah.
It's going to maximize your assets.
It's a crazy deal. You would definitely want to take advantage of it. Essentially a full makeover of your financial analysis done by their team, and then spotlighting opportunities where you can take advantage of it. And then if you want to work with them, so be it. But regardless, that's a huge value add right there.
It's powerful. It's powerful. Yeah. And if we can't give you six figures back, it doesn't cost you anything. So, you know, pretty good deal. Pretty good deal.
All right. Well, thank you, Dana. I really appreciate you. I know you're a busy guy taking time with us.
Thanks for having me on, my friend. Always good to catch up.
Yes. And listeners, thank you guys for supporting us, supporting the podcast, supporting the YouTube channel. Love you guys. Appreciate you all. And guys, until next time, be phenomenal.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Limitless MD. If you found value from this episode, I encourage you to share this episode with a friend and let me know by leaving a review. For more information, make sure you check out the links in the show notes below or simply visit vikramryan.com. Until next time, be phenomenal.